This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is iFanboy Media Explode number 42, the year-end mailbag.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions. And rainbows have nothing to hide.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Media Explode, episode 42, the year in mailbag. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hi there.
And Ron Richards.
Hello.
And it's the last Media Explode of the year. Next month, we'll be doing our all media year in roundup, which will take the place of the show. And so we thought we'd end it by opening up the mailbag and diving in like Uncle Scrooge into the money pit.
Answering your questions. I do want to note that Connor prepared a little script for us. And at the top of the script, this is described as the Media Split.
It is.
It's not the splode. Instead of an O, there's an I. Media Splide.
Yeah, Media so Splid sounds like a weed brand.
We're rebranding a lot of things next year.
Media Splide. I want to make a. Yeah. I'm gonna make a logo that says Media Splide and like script, like baseball, like a baseball font, Connor. Like Media Splide.
This is the show unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. Thank you for being a patron. If you are one, if you're not one, consider being one. We appreciate everyone who helps support our various shows. Thank you very much. We have a lot of emails, so we're going to dive right in. But first, we're going to open the show, as we always do, with our regular segment, what we've been enjoying since the last time we talked. And just real quick, there may or may not be spoilers in this entire show, but we'll find out as we go. So you're on your own. Let's do this. Ron, you're up first.
Oh, I thought Josh was going first.
He's going last since he didn't contribute to the script.
Got it. Okay. All right.
It's punishment.
So on my side, a couple of quick things. We've definitely, you know, I know the at the time of recording, the actor strike is still happening.
Oh yeah.
Although it should
getting
be
dire.
It's getting dire. But we definitely have reached the point of the we've got nothing to watch.
That's what I mean by dire. It's like
exactly.
It's
So this past weekend, my wife and I finally, Connor, followed up on your recommendation, and we watched on Apple TV Plus the movie Flora and Son, which was delightful.
It was just
wonderful. Directed by John Carney, the guy who did Sing Street and Once, most popularly, and what was the other one with Keira
Knightley? Begin Again,
yeah.
We watched that recently.
This was just like steeped in, you know, music as a through line.
Closer to Once, I think, than the other films.
Yeah, yeah, but not nearly as good as Once. But still.
No, Once is a masterpiece, and that's fine. But this is more, it's closer to Once in terms of tone, but it's funnier than Once.
Yeah.
Once is funny, but this is more of a comedy than Once was.
Whereas Sing Street had the retro whimsy, this had the modern whimsy.
I don't know that I've seen Sing Street.
Oh, you should check out WandaVision.
You can watch it, but it's not. It's his least good film.
Right. Yeah, it was fine. It was like the trailer was better than the movie.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But yeah, no, this was the, you know, like I posted on Instagram about it. I thought it was delightful, a good mix of music as a through line, but really a story of family and like modern family and overcoming challenges and all that stuff. And so good use of Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Let's hear it for the Nepo babies. The lead is Bono's daughter. She's terrific.
Oh, I didn't realize that's Bono's daughter. I didn't realize
she's
that.
Terrific.
Oh, wow. I had no idea. So that was enjoyable. But then also, as I mentioned, we've run out of shows to watch, although we are excited that The Gilded Age started up on HBO Max.
I know. I just saw that.
Yeah.
I want to make one line about The Gilded Age.
Okay.
I love that I'm watching a show where an entire scene turned on the drama of the shame of bringing your own lunch to work.
Yeah.
I need a low-stakes show, and this is the one that makes me happy.
Yes. Yeah. Dipped into some two new shows. One was not new shows, but shows that have been out for a while that I've been meaning to watch. One is called The Gold on Paramount Plus. Have either of you guys heard of this?
No.
This is up both your alleys. The Gold is it's BBC production, British-based show, takes place in 1982 in England when, much similar to our beloved Lufthansa heist in Queens, ooh, Goodfellas, a group of robbers go to Heathrow, to a storage unit outside of Heathrow, with it the intent to steal money that's being stored before it's shipped out via the airport.
Oh, I saw a trailer for this when I watched a show I'm going to talk about, yes.
But instead of that money, they find $26 million worth of gold bullion.
Hate when that happens.
And so the show is basically about, you know, the robbery happens in the first 20 minutes of the show. The show is about what happens next, about like, now that they've got the gold, what do they do with it?
I mean, it's a rough problem.
Yeah. And it looks as if it's a commentary on British society and the haves and have nots and like earned wealth versus new wealth and all that and that sort of thing.
I think that's most British shows.
Exactly.
Sitcoms.
Did you say it was a true story?
It is a true story. I think at the time it was the largest robbery of all time. In terms of value. The only notable actor, at least from what I saw, you guys might recognize other British actors, but Dominic Cooper, who unfortunately played Jesse Custer in the ill-fated Preacher adaptation.
Howard Stark,
yeah. He plays a lawyer who is getting involved in shifting the gold and doing all that
Hugh
sort of
Bonneville
stuff.
Hugh Bonneville from Downton Abbey?
Yeah, I don't know who that is, but it's on Paramount Plus. I'd recommend it to both of you.
Jack Lowden, Josh from, Horses.
Oh, is that the blonde man?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. He's the guy where when we watch Slow Horses, it's constantly a question of who does he look like? Like he almost looks like Simon Pegg and then he doesn't.
Oh, Slow Horses, the Apple TV Plus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Got to say, by the way, Ron, earlier, the way that you reacted to the drama of a man bringing his lunch to work tells me that I really think you'd get something out of Downton Abbey.
Possibly. I don't know. I do enjoy the Gilded Age.
I gotta say, it's the same show. It's just British.
Yeah.
It's
just got, different location. Yeah.
Exactly. It's got ostensibly, well, it's not immediately obvious that it's funny.
Yeah. Okay. So that was The Golds on Paramount Plus. It was a half an hour into this. I was like, oh, this is up Connor and Josh's alley.
I'll definitely check it out.
And then because my wife read the book, we started watching Lessons in Chemistry on Apple TV Plus, which is the TV show adaptation of a novel that was very popular a couple of years ago. It takes place in the 40s and 50s about a chemist in the LA area, played by Brie Larson as the lead.
Oh, Lindsay's watching that.
Very slowly paced.
Lindsay really likes it.
I feel like it probably should have been a movie.
The guy in that is also somebody's kid.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, Hollywood. It's family business.
Yeah. Lewis Pullman. Was he Bill Pullman's
kid? Bill Pullman's kid, probably.
Yeah. Lewis Pullman. Yeah, this guy. He's very good, actually. He's good in it.
Hey, many of them are. Jack Quaid.
Production values are through the roof. It looks amazing. Again, it looks like it. I mean, it's like, it's funny because watching on the different streaming services, it's clear that the Apple TV model is just like get big names and throw money at it, make it look really good.
It's prestige in terms of production quality. Yeah, Apple exactly. Definitely leads the pack in that sense.
Yeah. Enjoyable so far. I keep asking my wife, I'm like, this happened in the book?
You know, an interesting topic of conversation maybe for a future show, if the strike's still happening in January, would be, you know, recommend things to watch for each other that we may not otherwise want to check out.
That's a good idea.
Make the case for Downton Abbey. Make the case for Slow Horses.
Or we should do a challenge. We should do assignments. Yeah.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Within reason.
Yeah.
Please watch all of Suits.
And I had a bonus one I was going to add, but I'm going to save it because I have the script, Connor. I see it relates to one of the questions, so I'm going to hold off on it. So there you go. So Flora and Son on Apple TV Plus, The Gold on Paramount Plus, and Lessons in Chemistry on Apple TV Plus. Those are my picks.
So I saw The Gold trailer last night when I tuned into, I guess tuning is still a thing you do, tuned into Paramount Plus for the premiere of Lawmen, Bass Reeves, the latest from Taylor Sheridan, the latest Western. This is a, I don't know what this is in terms, the title sounds like they're setting up an anthology of different Lawmen stories. So you could do all kinds of Lawmen, Pat Garrett or Bat Masterson or whoever. But this is about Bass Reeves, one of the first, if not the first, black deputy U.S. Marshal in America. They premiered two episodes. They premiered, as of this recording, literally yesterday. Terrific cast. David Oyelowo is the lead, playing Bass Reeves. The only criticism I have for him is that he's not going full walrus mustache that Bass Reeves actually had. He's got the tight, almost Martin Luther King mustache he had in Selma. But he's not doing the full, like, Sam Elliott stash, which he really should be doing. But that's fine. Also stars Dennis Quaid and Donald Sutherland. And the first episode featured our favorite guy, Shea Whigham.
Oh, really?
So it seems like they're setting up Shea Whigham to be a down-the-road big bad. Also, Barry Pepper is very good in it. It's got a lot of those people, like, really sort of good character actors.
I just saw Shea Whigham in something I started watching, and I was like, ooh.
Shea Whigham plays a very despicable character, and it's hard because you like Shea Whigham sort of inherently, but you're just like, ugh.
Yeah, but you buy him as a despicable character.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Again, good production values. It takes place in the Old West. It starts in the Civil War. If you don't know anything about Bass Reeves, he's a fascinating character. Oh. Kind of like Lessons in Chemistry, a little slow paced. I think we're two episodes into what I assume will be 10, and he still hasn't gotten a badge yet. But I think that's happening in the third episode, which will be coming this week. But if you like Westerns, if you like David Oyelowo, or if you're a fan of like Yellowstone, whoever, I'd say check out Lawmen, Bass Reeves. So I think Josh would like it.
I put it on my list as you were talking.
Last weekend when I was homesick, as I still am, as you can hear my voice, I watched all of season 3 of Lupin, the French heist show. Love the first two seasons. The third season ends on a really emotional and dramatic cliffhanger. I don't know if they're doing any more of this show or not. I hope they do, because they can't just leave us in a lurch like that. The fun of that show is that almost every episode features some sort of crime, heist situation, and you watch for 3/4 of the episode as it unfolds, and then it backs up and shows you what really happened and why what you saw wasn't necessarily what really happened. It happens in every episode, and every episode you still get caught in it. It's a really fun, intricate sort of puzzle show about this do-gooder criminal in modern-day Paris, and it's all in French, and I quite enjoy it. And finally, I'm holding back on the final episode because I don't want it to end, but I've been obsessed with Strike Force 5, the podcast put together by the five late-night hosts in the United States, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Stephen Colbert, Seth Meyers, and John Oliver. They did this as a benefit show for their crew. All the proceeds from the ad sales and everything went to give money to their crews who are out of work. And the show was so good that I'm a nightly Colbert viewer and I'm a weekly John Oliver viewer. And it almost makes me enjoy their shows less because they're so loose and funny on this podcast. And it's like five friends who are extremely funny hanging out with each other and busting each other's balls for an hour. And it's so good.
I will jump on this in terms of sort of taking it as one of my own because I don't really have that much to talk about. I had seen whatever the clips on YouTube like Instagram, the reels, and I kind of saw it. I was like, oh, that's funny. I didn't really know what it was. And I said something to Connor and he's like, yeah, Megan's been listening to it. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And I went and I looked it up and I was like, oh, it's this podcast. And Lindsay starts tearing through them right away, my wife. And she comes to me and she's like, you need to start listening to this media because we need to talk about it. And every one of them was extremely delightful. And it's just like that feeling of like incredibly smart and funny people with Jimmy Fallon.
He's also funny. He's taken the role of the punching bag on the show.
I don't know that. There's definitely times where he was quick and funny, but when he did, it was surprising. And it's really interesting because I'm like David Brent, I guess, in that like I'm a failed comedian. So when I'm listening to this stuff, I'm listening to their different kind of senses of humor. And so John Oliver, when he speaks, everything he says sounds like it's scripted, because he's that good. And then Seth Meyers' thing is to pick up on one little detail, one crumb that you dropped, you know, and they just go there. And then Jimmy Kimmel is surprisingly funny.
He's very funny.
No, I know that, but like just in a...
But he's like wax him with a bat funny. Like he's not like a surgical strike funny.
But not dumb funny.
He's good.
No, I'm saying, but like it would seem like it's kind of dumb funny. It was just great. And when they came back for a couple more, I remember there was ones. So there was a few where they had guests on and I don't normally like it when podcasts have guests on. Because the fun of it is just listening to these guys. But it worked out really. So it was, Jon Stewart and there's Letterman and then eventually Ryan Reynolds. God, it's such a bummer that they're like, well, now the show's ending. And I was like, but this is better than the other things you do.
Right, this is better than what you do every night. Like, do this.
The other thing that was super fun about it was there was times where you were like, I think that they're forgetting that they're being recorded, because they would talk about, like, they were talking about guests. So yeah. they would be like, oh, so-and-so is a lunatic. You know, I can say their names. And I was like, Jesus. It was great. It was really like, it was sort of the first time since when, you remember when the pandemic started and everybody who was an entertainer had nothing to do, and all of a sudden all sorts of crazy things came out or whatever.
They were scrambling.
I know, but some of it was really sort of intimate and heartfelt and fun. And it was like that. Like, there's no circumstance economically that would ever make this make sense for those people.
No, no, God, no.
Other than they're like, well, we have time. I was like, you know what? 45 minutes a week, you guys can hang out with each other, you know, 6 months a year. Year, you know, obviously they were having fun.
Oh yeah,
God, it was such a delight. It was the best. Like, I kind of wasn't thinking about it in terms of podcasts for this part, but it's the best thing that I have listened to in the longest time.
Yeah,
not to be the contrarian, but I didn't last 10 minutes.
You don't like late night?
You didn't like how they treated Jimmy?
No, I can't stand Fallon. No, I mean, I used to watch Seth Meyers, and we watch John Oliver on a weekly basis. I don't watch Colbert. I don't really watch Kimmel. I don't really care for late night just in general, but I was like, oh yeah, whatever. And, you know, hearing how warmly it was spoken about, and I had a long drive ahead of me, I put it in and I was just like, oh, I don't need to hear fucking guys patting themselves on the back for an hour.
That was not it at all.
Yeah. I don't know.
Did you just listen to the first one?
It wasn't for me. It turned me off. That's
all. Listen to episode 5.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Okay.
That's the game show.
Again, I'm saying not to be contrarian. I'm saying it just wasn't for me. Not always for everyone.
But if you were 10 minutes in, I don't think you actually heard enough of it. Sounds like you were right away. I do this. You were like, I don't know. And you went another few minutes. You're like, I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, but things get better sometimes.
Right.
Whatever.
Possibly.
I have no skin in that game. I just wanted to sort of, because, I don't know, we finished the stuff we were watching. Lindsay and I started watching The Sopranos again. I don't know if that was like a offshoot from when we talked about HBO last time. And like, I just wanted to watch something that was really compelling. And, you know, those shows are all to me like the great novels. You can sort of go back to them and watch them again. We've been tearing through it. We're in like the middle of the third season now. And it lives up to all of the things that it's supposed to. It's been, I don't know, 5 or 6 years since I watched it or anything like that. But this time, I think, you know, when I watch a new show, like a great show through a second time, I sort of find a different thing to focus on. So like the two things I keep looking at is, as I'm trying to figure out what David Chase is trying to say from moment to moment, if anything, which is kind of fun. I was like, oh, because sometimes every once in a while, one of the dumbass gangsters will just say something. I was like, he's way too smart to think that. But, you know, or it's way too smart for what he's thinking. And then the other part is just watching Gandolfini at this point and just be like, well, what is it that everybody thought was so great about it? And sort of focusing on him and watching him do all the different things. And it really is, he's kind of amazing in that way. I did this like one of those times I went back and I've done that a couple of times, watched through Seinfeld. And like at a certain point, I started watching Julia Louis-Dreyfus through that. And I was like, she's the best thing on this show. And it wasn't obvious to me when I was younger. Just meaning that you sort of capture that sort of genius going on in that thing. And it's, you know, not everything is worth watching again, but there are certain shows from our lives. And it's, you know, it's arguable that The Sopranos it's certainly top 5 most important shows of our life, could be higher in terms of, you know, being a great thing and affecting everything that came after it. So that's been really fun. Also, in terms of watching a thing again, I watched through all of the It Crowd. And having that been done, I then watched through all of Black Books again, which was the show that he did before the It Crowd and after Father Ted. I am now to understand that Graham Linehan has said some quite reprehensible things and people hate him very much. And I have since decided that the show is still funny as fuck. I mean, like, I'd watched the It Crowd once 15 years ago or whenever. And actually, there's a bunch of it at the end that I think I hadn't seen. And it was so funny.
So good. The show was so good.
What did you watch it on?
BritBox. I got a free 2-month trial to BritBox. And now I think I'm paying another like $4 a month for it for another couple of months or something like that. And that's also where, you know, actually Black Books was on Freevee, I think. Whatever. You know, but it was one of those things. It's like, it was just effortlessly funny. It was joke after joke after joke. And you watch, what's Roy's real name? The actor who became famous after the
Chris O'Dowd.
Chris O'Dowd. I mean, that guy, he really plays dumb incredibly well. And then at the other side, you have Richard Ayoade. It's one of the funniest shows I've ever seen in my entire life. There's a couple of bits in it where you're like, ooh, that part didn't age well. But they're sort of few and far between. And I just was surprised at how good it still was after all of these years. And actually went on a lot longer, or at least over a longer period than I remembered, I guess. Like, it sort of went to like 2010 or something like that was the last one. That was great. I'm not going to talk about Black Books, but if you haven't seen it, that show's incredible too. It's just three short seasons about a very crabby man who runs a bookstore. It's extremely wacky. There's not a lot of reality to it. It's sort of like The It Crowd, but almost even more so. I love that show. It's great. That's all. That's what I've been watching.
All right. So that's what we've been enjoying. Let's move on to the mailbag. We asked people to write in. We asked for some holiday questions. We got some of those at the end of this bag, the bottom of the bag. We pulled out some of the best ones we wanted to answer. We didn't get to everybody's questions, sent them in, and we apologize if we didn't get to yours. We just couldn't do them all, and some of them we couldn't even answer, so we had to skip those. But let's start off with Owen M. from Bray, County Wicklow, Ireland. Curious as to what your thoughts are on the Beatles Now and Then, the song itself, the technology, the mythos, the history, all of it.
It's funny because I'm wondering if Owen is in our internal iFanboy office Slack, because it's been a hotly discussed topic of the last week or two of the last Beatles song to be released, Now and Then. That was actually going to be my bonus above, but I wanted to save it. But before we get to the thing I want to talk about, gentlemen, after the hullabaloo of it, the 12-minute mini doc, and then the release of the song, how are you feeling about it?
I've kind of actively avoided it. And it's not that I'm not trying to be cool, like I don't even care. Yeah. It's rather that I kind of do care, and I know it's probably not going to make much of an impact on me in that way, which is kind of disappointing. So I've just sort of, like, I feel like I'm going to be sitting there at one point just like, all right, I'm going to put it on. But I kind of wanted it to be perfect. Like, I was at my computer. I was like, I don't want to play this on my computer, you know? And then the other night, I was like, I don't feel like I'm just putting it off. I don't know why. It's like going to the doctor. I don't know, something.
Ouch. It's good. It's not a great song, but it's good. I don't think it's as good as the other two songs they did for the anthology, but I have watched the doc twice and the music video.
So let's save it on the music video, because I want to hold it. We need to specifically talk about the music video.
I think watching the doc twice and the music video made me like it more. When I first heard the song, I was like, yeah, that was okay. And then I watched the doc and watched the doc again, the music video. And then I was like, well, I think I like it more now that I've heard it a few times, that I've sort of seen the backstory of it. Yeah. There's a moment in the doc where they're talking about the first time they heard John's vocals after they ran through the Mal system, the system that cleaned up the vocals, and they play it in the dock with no accompanying sound, just his voice. And they said that Paul cried, and I got emotional hearing that for whatever reason.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
I got emotional just hearing that part of it. And I kind of wish they would go through and fix his vocals on the other two songs now, because they were really rough.
They can.
Yeah.
Clearly.
And it's okay for you to remaster those. That's fine.
Yeah. It's a solid Beatles song. It's not a great Beatles song, but it's a solid Beatles song.
So that's why I'll stop. So I watched the documentary. I've listened to the song, and then I've watched the video, the aforementioned video. And I kind of like, it's funny because I'm kind of falling somewhat in the middle of the, like often where one of us always falls in the middle of the other two. When Anthology came out in 95, I did not like the two songs that came out and was ultimately dismissive of them, because I was like, they're not real. It's not a thing. And I still feel that same feeling of this. This is not a Beatles song. This is a John Lennon demo that he had recorded in the late 70s that then the Beatles have come and like, well, we're going to add our bits to it. We'll make it into a Beatles song, which is nice from an emotional standpoint.
And valid. You can do that. But if it's done in the late 70s, right there.
It's a little bit of gimmicky. It's a little bit of nostalgia. It's fine. And especially coming off Get Back and now the Peter Jackson of it all and all this sort of stuff, it's fine. I thought of everything, the documentary was probably the most value out of anything, just to see what about the process and the kind of memories, and then the enduring legacy now as Paul and Ringo kind of continue on the legacy. And then I watched the music video.
It's amazing.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's the best thing I've seen in forever.
You've got to be kidding me.
It's perfectly in their wacky 60s aesthetic.
Oh, man. It is like...
Go back and watch their short films from the 60s. Those are fucking weird.
Trust me, I have, and I understand that. It is... This music video is full of interesting choices that on one hand, it's like 40% cringe, 60% mediocrity. And there's definitely a way that you could approach this music video and play into the nostalgia of it and play into, you know, this sort of stuff. And they do that to a point, but then there's not enough budget to sell what they thought they would try to do. And it just comes off looking weird and uncomfortable.
I think it was wonderful. I got emotional watching that.
Wonderful too. Is not the word I would use to describe that.
When you say uncomfortable, though,
have you seen it?
What? I just said no.
He hasn't heard the song.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know. I hadn't heard. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like uncomfortable.
You've got to sit down and watch it. Then you'll know, see what I mean.
Like, is it uncomfortable in the sense that like it's watching these old men do something that's sort of dorky? Nope. Or
nope.
No, it's weird.
Okay. It's weird.
It's like they're on LSD making a music video, and it's great.
No, I would give it more credit if it was like that, if it went far enough to be like that, but it doesn't. It's trying to tap into that wackiness or whatever, but with a, I don't know if it's a budget issue or a time issue or an age issue, but there's a piece that's missing that makes it not just really awkward and disturbing and not in a good way. And trust me, you guys know me. I want awkward and disturbing in a good way. This was not awkward and disturbing in a good way by any shape or form. Josh, you got to watch it and then come back to us because there's just some very odd decisions made.
Right.
It's terrific. Let's move on to the next email, Josh, and do number two.
Number two is Scott H. of Portland, Oregon. As someone who's a fan of the Criterion Collection, I've started wondering what would the iFanboy film collection look like? I can think of a few films, Goodfellas, Star Wars, Jaws, that the three of you seem to treasure. Are there other consensus films that the three of you would collect and preserve as a sort of iFanboy film canon? In my mind, these would be films that, like the GDATs, you would all need to unanimously agree should be added to the collection. This is fantastic.
Great. Yeah, it's very cool.
We could do this. We could fill the rest of the show right here. So I'd like to see how we're going to avoid doing that.
Well, I think it's safe to say that there's a certain, you know, this is also a great idea, but there's a certain just like no-brainer gimmies that are actually honestly kind of boring because it would be like Star Wars, Jaws, Goodfellas. Like,
sure, but he said that. So we're...
Totally.
Is it National Lampoon's Vacation? Or is it just one scene from it?
No, I love Vacation as a whole.
What's funny is that when I'm thinking here, I'm trying to think of examples. Rain of Fire. Although everything I think of, I feel like is with one of you, but not necessarily both of you.
That's not true.
I mean, not just that one. I just mean like the examples I'm thinking of. Like, so I could say JFK. I know Connor and I, that's on our list, but not.
Oh, I love JFK.
Okay.
I love JFK. Yeah. Back into the Left.
In that same vein, like, I think I just started thinking of mine because as soon as I said JFK, I was like 13 days, but that's a me thing. And maybe Connor.
The thing is, what are the films that we've all talked about a lot or seen together that we really loved? I mean, I think you could make the case for The Departed.
The Departed, it was I was about to say. Gangs of New York, then.
Any Tarantino film that we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, for sure.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, for
sure. Pulp Fiction.
I mean, Connor, I mean, Crossroads has got to be in there, right?
Crossroads is great.
I mean, I'm not voting for that.
It's just made it just outside of canon.
Is Wet Hot American Summer count?
Oh, hell yeah.
For Connor?
I like it. I love it.
It's just a Ron and me. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking the Lord of the Rings trilogy has to be there. Yeah.
How about, I know we went and all saw this together.
Borat?
The 2008 Star Trek.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. I put that in there.
Yeah, it was a good time for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. Fun time at the movies.
What about Borat?
Borat was a good time at the movies.
It was, but have you... None of us have talked about it since.
No, I've never watched it. You can't recreate that moment.
Right, I know. So that's like not a movie we necessarily revisit. We had an experience with it. We all saw 300 together as well, and a baby was crying.
The baby should have been
crying. We all saw Spider-Man 3 together, and we've never mentioned it since. And that's not even a joke. Like, we all saw it and walked out just stunned and have not mentioned it since.
I don't think it would be a giant canon or collection, but I think it would be a solid canon. It would also be weird and distinctly ours. And we could maybe think about doing this question as a whole episode later and sort of try to figure it out for sure.
I would have to come with a list. I would go look at my movie collection.
Because Josh, you're factoring in there a shared experience aspect of it, which I don't think is a requirement.
No. That was one thing that I brought. It was just those examples. Yeah. But I think the other one, because basically, if we all went to see something, then there's something there. But the other thing would be like things we talk about a lot, and like I start to think about movies that I love. I'm like, oh, is this? And I go, nah, it's not for one. Not one of them isn't his thing. So we'd have to work at it, I think.
We're pretty targeted about the movies we talk about all the time. It's not a huge list.
Yeah.
It's true.
Ron, do number three.
John Joseph J. from Brooklyn writes in and says, been thinking about this question since I first saw Josh tempt fate and get back on a skateboard recently. What, if any, skateboard videos is Josh watching, and are there younger professionals you follow? John Dickerson and Grant Taylor are two skaters I can never get enough of. Also, what is your larger motivation to start skating again? I've gotten a setup again recently and find myself daydreaming and setting quixotic goals of doing things on a skateboard I couldn't do when I was 20 and now have no likelihood of accomplishing. Do you find yourself doing something similar? And when taking back up a hobby or activity, do you find yourself trying to engineer a reasoning for why you spend time pursuing it?
Josh, what hurts right now?
This is very personal.
I strained my psoas muscle and I can't. I don't think I told this on the show. By the way, why do I do it? I was going with my 9-year-old and he wanted to do it. When I was doing it, it was fun. I also like buying equipment. So I was like, oh, I get to make a skateboard again. And I did that. And I go with him. And it's really fun.
How long after building the skateboard did you hurt yourself?
Quite a while. So what happened was I've actually been fine. I got pads and helmet. Like, I don't fuck around. Like, there's no, I can't fall and hurt myself. So I've never done a kickflip in my life. I can ollie. That's about it. I was never a good skateboarder. That should be noted. Like, I can stay on it. That's about it. And then also I'm old enough so that like all the stuff that people think of street skating now that is very like, none of that happened when I was a kid. There were no ramps. There were no anything. You know, like it was, you found a.
I know, just the fact that there's skate parks in every town now just blows my mind. Yeah, like it used to be for us in high school, it was like, what parking lot can we skate in that we haven't been chased out of yet?
Exactly. You know, there wasn't really a lot you could do. You know, and nobody really did kickflips. Like all the stuff that people do, that's Rodney Mullen shit. And we didn't do that. Yeah. So I really, every once in a while, I'll go, you know, there's YouTube now that teaches you how to do everything. I was like, yeah, how do I do a kickflip? Because I've been trying it for 30 years the wrong way. And like the weather was really crappy. And so I didn't have a chance to try it after I'd watched it. And then I came out from my office into the parking lot. I knew I had a skateboard in the back of my truck. So I opened it up and I was like, all right, I'm just going to try it one time. And I kicked down with my left foot because that's how, you know, that's how you'd ollie. And immediately I felt a pain in a muscle that I did not know the name of. Like it was 1 second. And this is, I've been skating for months and I haven't really had a problem. And it doesn't hurt when I do anything except try to skateboard. So I can't do an ollie or anything. At the same time, my 9-year-old hurt his foot. So we've both been taking a break. I don't really follow any skateboarding videos or anything like that or people. I went back and I watched the Bones Brigade video again. And when Rodney Mullen talks, I cry. And then, you know, like my favorite skater was Lance Mountain. So he talks. But I watched old stuff and I've been watching other stuff, but like, I don't know who anybody is. So I'm not there. I'm not following it.
You got to promise us that when you fall and crush your nuts on a rail, that someone will film it.
Well, here's the thing is he mentioned a goal. So I had one goal was I wanted to learn to drop in on like a quarter pipe type of ramp, which I've never done before. Because again, there were no fucking ramps. And I did it. I finally, like, I worked my way up to it and I did it. And so I did like a 4-foot-1. I was like, that's cool. And I'm terrified to go any higher. There's a thing that is stopping me for like, I'm kind of stuck at this little progression point I got at.
It's your sense of mortality and your knowledge of what will happen if you fall, which as a kid you don't have, or even as a young adult you don't have.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, that's it. It's fun, but
it's called survival mechanism.
It's good, but it's been really fun. Like, I need stuff that keeps me moving around and sort of doing things. And so that part's really good for me. And I have the excuse of being 46. Like, what do you want me to do? I'm overweight and 46. Fuck off.
Nick B from Melbourne, Australia. I've been thinking about this question for almost a month since I watched David Lynch's Mulholland Drive. I'm not very familiar with the Lynchian style, so I found the film a bit jarring. But still overall enjoyed the experience, despite feeling required to delve into various video essays to understand certain parts of the movie. I wanted to get your takes on that movie, and what other David Lynch works are worth checking out. I am considering Twin Peaks.
Oh, jeez. Go for it. Honestly, Mulholland Drive is one, I would say, not blank spot, but dark spot in terms of my Lynch fandom. And that, like, I saw it in the theater when it came out. I think I've watched it once at home, like a year later. And that's, I have not revisited in 20 plus years.
First of all, check out Twin Peaks for sure.
Yeah, 100% check out Twin Peaks. That
it's his most, second most mainstream, second most accessible work.
Yeah.
If the weird jarring bits you found intriguing, but confusing, the Twin Peaks should be a nice primer into that.
Might I recommend my old Thanksgiving tradition of, you know, Thanksgiving weekend is a great time to pop in the pilot episode of Twin Peaks and just go get as much as you can get done over those 4 days. It's a lot of fun.
That might be worse than when I saw Casino on Thanksgiving. I will say this. I think that Twin Peaks The Return split the Twin Peaks fandom into two groups, one of which suddenly realized they weren't actually big David Lynch fans.
Yeah. And they found out they were Mark Frost fans.
Right. And so I kind of fall into that camp a little bit. I like David Lynch. I think he's a great artist.
To give the context, Twin Peaks was co-written and created by Mark Frost and David Lynch. Mark Frost had a long history in television, and that's why I think David Lynch is a film auteur. And like, what's great about Twin Peaks was the merging of their two perspectives. And when David Lynch got fed up and kind of stepped away during season 2, and Frost got more to the forefront, you lost that edge that Twin Peaks had. Like, The magic was two of them together executing at that level. The first season has it unequivocally. The second season, not as much. And The Return is just something else.
The Return is mostly Lynch unleashed. Yes. And it's, I didn't really like it.
This is like Roger Avery, the forgotten contributor to Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Everyone remembers Quentin Tarantino, but he's like,
yeah, and then the Rules of Attraction came out, and everyone's like, oh.
So it's tough. I don't think I've ever I did see Mulholland Drive. I've never seen the Robert Blake one. Yeah, I have seen that one. They don't stick with me. I don't love it, but I think you should definitely check out Twin Peaks. That's like his magnum opus.
Absolutely. Yeah. And minimum the pilot, try to get through season one. It's short.
Yeah, it's short. And also, I think the first quarter of season two.
Yeah.
It's still very much in the vein of season one.
Yeah.
Josh?
I don't like David Lynch. I don't know any of it.
Next email.
Next question. Yeah, we didn't think you would.
We know you don't like it. Everyone knows. The whole town
number?
Knows.
Five. Ryan S. of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. If you guys were ever to do another Movies by Minutes podcast, ignoring that others aside from Star Wars Minute and Goodfellas Minute exist, what movie would the three of you pick? I haven't really done this question. I've been thinking about this question since the end of Goodfellas Minute. And then number two, what are your top three Scorsese movies?
Well, so real quickly, I just pulled up moviesbyminutes.com and there are currently 239 Jesus. Podcasts listed by those.
Did anyone do Rain of Fire?
No, no one's done Rain of Fire.
There you go. So so anyone who's come along recently, we did Goodfellas Minute in 2012?
16?
11?
12? No, not 12. That's too early. 16? Sounds better. Closer.
16? Sure. Yeah,
we did,
16.
So we did Goodfellas Minute. Around there. When we finished that show, we briefly discussed doing Jaws Minute. Someone started doing Jaws Minute, so we threw that out. I don't think they ever finished doing Jaws Minute, but it didn't matter. I think we also settled on the idea that there was no movie that hit the Venn diagram for us, like Goodfellas, and we couldn't find another one that would.
Yeah.
Like all of our interests, historical stuff to talk about, New York stuff to talk about. Like it had all kinds of different veins to mine, and we couldn't really find another one like that.
If
we did talk about it. We just
couldn't find one. If Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was shorter.
Yeah. Mm.
I think we could do that.
The thing for me that is the magic of what Star Wars Minute did and what the magic of what we did with Goodfellas Minute was the analysis and enjoyment of the film of the subject commingled with the historical.
Yeah.
Right.
And the history of actually making the movie as well.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
That's a big part of Star Wars.
And Goodfellas, we got a little extra because we had the historical, what it was based on, along with the making of, where Star Wars is mainly on the historical of the making, which I find interesting.
Yeah.
Right. And like going through this list of 239 other, it's great. I mean, like I love Top Secret and I love that someone's doing Top Secret Minute. That's not a movie I want to analyze minute by minute. So like for me, it's got to be the Venn diagram of like, worthy enough stuff to talk about in each minute episode of what's on film, but then also what's the story underneath the film, you know?
Yeah.
And the story underneath the reality of the film.
You know, like, so Goodfellas, you have the making of it and those actors, which is interesting. Then you have the actors in it who were not actors and all the weird shit that had to do with them. Then you had the real people that they're based on. Then you had what was going on in New York. There's a lot of stuff about the Robert Moses expressways. And then finally, we had the music. Like, there was a lot of things just outside of them.
There were so many lanes to go down that we never ran out of things to talk about.
Sometimes, literally.
Yeah. I think we answered this Scorsese question before really fast. Goodfellas, The Departed, Hugo.
Go, Josh.
Goodfellas, Departed, Gangs of New York.
I go Goodfellas, Gangs of New York, The Aviator.
Oh,
I really like
The Aviator. Wave of the Future.
Good movie.
I also like Cape Fear.
Ooh. I really love Casino.
Yeah.
And I didn't until I watched it later. And then I was like, oh, this movie's uncomfortable. Like in the way that it's supposed to be.
I need to rewatch After Hours.
Hmm. Yes. Ron, do six.
Marcus V writes in and says, I have watched what feels like 6 hours, there you go, Josh, of Once Upon a Time in America, not of Hollywood, but 6 hours of Once Upon a Time in America on Disney Plus, and just got to the intermission. I've actually had an intermission every week or so with this movie, and apparently I'm only 2.5 hours in. Look, I love Sergio Leone. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is my favorite movie of all time, but should I commit another 5 weeks to Once Upon a Time in America? I've been thinking about this for 2 months and 5 days since I started Once Upon a Time in America.
I feel like I wrote this.
I think so, but that's just up to me. I mean,
I didn't make it.
It is a lot to do, but I feel like it's worth watching.
It is, but if also there's a certain benefit in cutting bait. If you're not enjoying it, then
yeah, I agree.
There's other things to do.
Let's say you. So you guys, I think I might have finished it, but it didn't stick with me, and it was a real slog. You know, like if 2.5 hours in, you don't care, you ain't gonna.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, there's also like a sunk time cost. Like he's already 2.5 hours in.
Yeah, but
I mean, it's a 4-hour movie,
right?
I don't know. I feel like if you're not enjoying it, doesn't matter. Just cut bait. There's other things to do with your time.
Yeah.
Now, this movie's come up 3 times already in the show. Aaron M. from Houston, Texas. Can the iFanboy movie crew explain to me why the Tarantino movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is such a beloved film by you guys? I feel like I just don't get it. It has great characters and actors, but I just don't get the plot. I really like all of his other films, but this one doesn't work for me. I've been thinking about this since I left the theater on release night.
It's
a good question.
For me,
I think it's a good question.
I think it's a great question. I think for me, The answer is that I love Tarantino. I love Brad Pitt. I like DiCaprio. I love Hollywood. And it compellingly mixed all of those together in an engaging moment that at our age, I think resonated more so than maybe for, I don't know how old Aaron is or whatnot, but like the feelings of the film, I can't relate
don't,
or
don't
I could
discount
feel.
Your love of 60s cult murders as well.
True. Yeah, exactly. I do
okay,
love 60s cult murders.
I, can, I think I can take that a little more. So, you know, the story is sort of the death of an era.
Yeah.
The story is there is a guy who is an actor who's had a mid-level career. It's the story of a mid-level band struggling to come to terms with their own limitations in the harsh face of stardom. Oh, I can memorize that so I can pull it out at some point. Anyway, you know, so it you know, it's a guy who did pretty well. And he kind of thinks the world of himself, but his time is ending and you're watching him go through that. And he's got a best friend who's the best friend you could ever want, the best dude, but he kind of also works for him. So that's awkward. And then at the same time, you have all of these other things blowing up around him, which he wants to be part of, but he doesn't understand and he's not part of. If you're a 46-year-old man who grew up before the internet and you're watching the world change all around you, there's a lot to relate to there. At the same time, it's the voice of an entirely unique creator and you learn to like that voice. So you like how they do things. Yeah. But there's things in there that tickle all the notes of the stuff that we came up enjoying when we learned how to like movies, when we learned how to like scripts and stories. That touches on all those things. You're watching. And at the same time, also, it's really interesting is that the actors portraying those characters that I just said are also going through that.
Yep.
At some point, Brad Pitt is going to be irrelevant. And he might even be to some people. And so there's layers upon layers going on there. And it's really interesting. And then at the same time, it's stylistic. It's interesting the way that they do
it's
cutting
visually
and music
beautiful.
And visuals are all things that we love just based on all the other work.
I will pull up that movie and watch the scene of him driving through Hollywood at sunset. Mm-hmm. And it's just beautiful. It's just fantastic.
Let's not discount Margot Robbie is terrific. And it also
for sure. Yeah,
it's important to understand it's a hangout film. It's not a plot driven movie.
Yeah.
It's about atmosphere and character. You spend long stretches in single scenes in the movie. He's not advancing a story or a plot. It takes place over a nebulous amount of time. You're following these three characters as they live their life in this time of change that as Josh just mentioned. And then you get to this climactic sequence, but it's not about a plot. It's not about following, you know, the murderers from the start to finish. It's not about finding a killer. It's not about stopping a murder. It's literally just living with the moments of these characters as they live their lives and then leaving. It's coming in and coming out. It's not a plot-driven movie. So if you don't like the plots, because there really isn't much of one.
But that's very difficult to make work.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it loosely hangs onto a thread. And I think I've said, you know, when I walked out, I was like, I'm not sure what to make of that.
That was the same reaction I had. I wasn't sure either. I had to really think about it and see it again until I really got it.
You know, I came back to it later and I watched it. And it was like the second time I saw it that it clicked. You know, there was things I definitely liked about it. And I do remember there's the moment that you realize, oh, this is the Manson family. And we all know enough about these things in relative detail.
We were terrified as kids of Charlie Manson.
So, you know, like you're watching that part happen and you're going, wait a minute, what's supposed to happen here? And then there's a moment where you go, well, that didn't happen. And that's a lot like, you know, Inglourious Basterds is sort of the same kind of, you know, hey, that's not right. And then from there you realize like, oh, we don't know what's going to happen. Oh, they're going to change history. You know, it's all that's interesting.
It's just about reveling in the characters and the atmosphere and the time and what's happening around them. It's not about following from A to B to C in terms of structure. Or anything.
And I'm not even exaggerating. I think it's the greatest thing that Brad Pitt's ever done. I just watch him in that and I'm just like, I'm not entirely clear what he's doing, but it's so fascinating to watch.
And he's so good that he overshadows Leo, who's also, I think, really excellent and doesn't get the recognition because Brad is so good in it.
I agree. Yeah.
Yep.
Josh, do 8.
8 is Brian C. of Cincinnati, Ohio. I've been thinking about this for a few weeks now.
By the way, everyone. Thank you.
Oh,
keep going.
It's so good. Between the death of Harry Belafonte and watching Muppet Mayhem, I've seen a lot of clips of the old Muppet Show recently. And thinking on every time Disney had tried to revive the Muppets, I have to ask, why not just bring back the fracking Muppet Show? Go back, watch the old episodes, the format and content still holds up. The biggest objection I've heard is that it would be a mouthpiece for Disney cross-promotion, to which I respond, so you wouldn't want to see the Muppets hang out with the likes of Tom Hiddleston, Owen Wilson, Melissa McCarthy, Pedro Pascal, okay, it's enough examples, Cheryl Lee Ralph, Steph Curry, and so on, cool. Or think back to on the cool stuff that they did with Elton John and Alice Cooper. What could they do with the likes of Billie Eilish or Lady Gaga? Would it be too expensive to make today? Or is Disney just that blind? Let's go to Disney employee Ron Richards and Muppet fan.
I mean, this is really disturbing because I feel like Brian is peering into my life and my household because I've had this exact same conversation with my wife because we watched, you know, I excitedly watched Muppet Mayhem, which unfortunately fell short, you know, had some good moments and had some good laughs, but fell short of my expectations because it fell for the same trap that every production about the Muppets post Jim Henson passing has fallen into, which is the subject is not the Muppets themselves, rather it's some other human relating and interacting with the Muppets and that story. When I don't care about those people, I care about the Muppets. My wife and I were talking about this and ultimately came to the same conclusion that Brian has, which is it's right there in front of you. Just do the Muppet Show.
Right.
Just do the Muppet Show and have a celebrity guest, do a variety show, do sketches, do skits. Just do the Muppet Show. It worked. It was genius in 1979.
Oh, so good.
It would be genius now with the right writers, but everybody falls prey to the, you know, make it meta. You know, what is, how do the Muppets interact with social media and all that? Like, who gives a crap? If you want that stuff to be subject matter in the sketches, that's fine, but just do the sketch comedy and play to the Muppet strength, which none of the productions that they've done for the past 20 plus years do, including the most recent movies.
Do you think it's because Henson's gone and they're just never going to recapture that genius?
Yeah, I don't know if it was Henson or whoever else at the Henson Company or whatever doing it, but it always falls prey to celebrity agreeing to do the cameo because their kids will be excited they did something with the Muppets, and it's like, oh, look at me, I'm here with the Muppets, and there's no meat to it. You go back and you watch that episode with Steve Martin, the Steve Martin episode, it is hysterical.
Well, because the Muppets were genuinely subversive in the 70s too, so you had that extra element to it.
Yeah. Yep.
Did you like the Jason Segel movie?
I liked it. It was closest. It was closest.
The first one was really good.
I remember laughing an awful lot in that movie. Yeah. But it is fall victim of the things that you just said. And I don't think that's wrong. But, I mean, it might be that
it can't be done.
That, it, you know, Henson may have been the secret sauce there.
It also may be the time frame. The 70s and 80s was a very specific.
There may not
sense
be an audience
humor.
For it now.
Yeah. No, not even audience. It's just that sense of humor.
That is a good point.
Is very specific to that time. Like Steve Martin's sense of humor is very specific to that time frame.
Sure. That's like saying, just do Saturday Night Live like they did in the 70s again. It's like, it's not the 70s.
It's a little easier than that. Yeah, exactly.
Josh, read nine.
Nine says, Greg M. of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania also. While this question is mostly for Ron, I hope that everyone is able to join in, indicating that Greg doesn't know Ron because we wouldn't have a chance to join in. What holiday classics deserve the Muppet treatment? Muppet Christmas Carol is a holiday must in my household, but what holiday movies could be done with the Muppets?
See, I appreciate your fervor there, but you're falling into the same trap, which is let's just take something established and do it with the Muppets, which I also don't subscribe to.
That's how Christmas Carol came about. It's a classic.
True. I did buy the soundtrack on color vinyl. That's
it's hard. Like you can't just take like the script for Vacation and do it with Muppets. You know, it's not like
right.
You know what? Just because of the sort of over-the-top tone, I think you could do some sort of fun Home Alone Muppets situation because it's almost a cartoon anyway.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
but this ends up being parody. It ends up just becoming parody.
I could conceivably see you could go super like they did with Muppet Christmas Carol. Instead of going contemporary, you go super old and do like Muppet White Christmas. You know,
I think it has to be a classic. I think even you could consider doing Muppet It's a Wonderful Life with Kermit in the, you know.
I could see that. You can see It's a Wonderful Life. Same thing. But like with White Christmas, you know, Kermit is the Bing Crosby, right? Yeah. And Fozzie is the, you know, like you need to be able to map the characters to the right casting, right? Because that's what it's all about. Do something like The Bishop's Wife or, you know, something like, you know, like something really.
Ron, you're really going for the popular appeal there. Nice work.
Well, I think he's
right, though. I think you can't do a modern film because it doesn't work.
Yeah, but there isn't a modern film that you would remake.
I do think you could do Elf. You could do Elf with Gonzo in the Will Ferrell role, right? Again, you could do all the mappings. Like, you just got to map the characters.
Hey, there's no point. That's the thing about classic. There's no point in redoing Elf at this point. Like, if you did, you should do it like Psycho. Just do it shot for shot, but put Muppets in there instead. Same script, same everything. It's kind of cool. I'd watch that.
All right. Our final question, which is actually five questions. We're going to do them sort of rapid fire style. Dave C. from Buffalo, New York says, Happy holidays, Josh, Ron, and Connor. His first question, which holiday meals from any form of media would you like to experience in the company of the cast or whatever the parameters of the fictional world? Like, would you like to be at the table when Clark cuts into the turkey and it's all just hot air?
Oh, I don't think I've ever connected to the meals. And
no.
Yeah.
That seems like a bad place to be.
the turkey's not a good night. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a chainsaw involved.
Are there a lot of meals? They're not usually...
That's a very specific...
Let's go to the next question.
All right.
Yeah, let's do that.
Do any of you have favorite holiday memories with each other?
When we all lived in the same area, we would go to an end-of-year steak dinner, which I would pay lots of money to do again, because that was always something I looked forward to.
That was one of my favorite parts of the holiday season, yeah. Was our end-of-the-year steak dinner.
Agreed.
I still think about some of those meals. Like, I still, like, in my quiet moments, would be like, oh, I remember the steak at Sparks.
Yeah. Yeah, yep, yep. It's time. Where was the place you went to where we're like upstairs and it was an old
brick? That was Sparks.
No, it was a Keen's.
No. Yes,
oh, Keen's.
Yep,
Keen's. We were up in like the top room. Yeah,
yep.
And then the first time we went to the one in Brooklyn,
Peter Luger.
There, Peter Luger.
The bacon.
Yeah, that was, and I can see and hear the waiter.
Yep.
And his like long ass apron, and we're just noob children, you know, like out pretending to be adults.
We were like 28 years bacon. Old.
Oh my God. This is
it was so good. Oh God. It was so good.
Those were great dinners. That was our end of the year fanboy tradition where we got through the year. We did it for, was it like four or five times?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really good.
So good.
Question three. Since 2020 or so, have you instituted any new holiday traditions other than trying to not die?
I mean, together or individually?
I mentioned it above
in the Muppets, but somehow White Christmas has become a tradition me and my wife to watch at some point, like through the December, like that. That's worked its way in the rotation where it previously wasn't, at least for me. Not a big like revelatory moment there, but still.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, that's pretty recent. We've only had two holidays since then.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if it's 2020. It may be 2019 or 2018, but I'll just take it anyway. I've got a fairly big family in terms of like all the kids plus spouses plus their kids. And so we used to get everyone a present. You know, everyone got a present. So you ended up buying like 25 presents in the holiday time.
Jeez. Oh,
we decided one year just to do a Secret Santa. So you buy two presents. You get two people. Mm-hmm. You buy two presents. That's all you have to worry about. It's much more economical. Other than the kids get presents. But the adults, you just get two adults to get presents to.
I mean, you know, my kids are 13 and 9. They're kind of a little older now. And so, I don't know, that all still feels new to me. Like, oh, having our kids. But years ago, we would always drive to Maine because that's where my family was. It wasn't awesome to have to drive 2 or 3 hours both ways on Christmas.
Yeah.
When my grandmother died, like, we kind of stopped doing it. And my mom will come here. And it's just really nice that we just... are at our house. We don't go anywhere. It's just a small, like the few of us. It's nice. You know, the best mood my kids are in all year. Well, we used to get Chinese food, but there's no Chinese food left. You know, like it's a good, my mom comes, like I like that part. I really like it because it's very small and intimate. I don't have a big extended family. My wife's family's Jewish, so I don't have to worry about any of that. It's good.
I love my family on both sides, but one of the best Christmases was 2020 when we didn't go anywhere.
Oh, it's great.
didn't have to do the four families. Holiday. I love them. I love seeing them, but also that was really just really nice change of pace.
Yeah.
I did spend one Christmas on the side of the Kosciuszko Bridge.
You're going to straight out of a movie.
Because right after my parents got divorced, I was in my 20s and my siblings were younger. You know, we'd spend the morning with my mom and then we'd drive over to my dad's from Brooklyn to Queens. We'd spend like the evening with him and then we'd come back to Brooklyn. And one year the car broke down right on the bridge.
Oh, jeez.
Christmas night, getting a tow truck, calling a friend to come pick us up to take us
memories.
Home. Memories. Yeah. Question four, have you added any new holiday media to your rotation in the last few years?
Well, the aforementioned White Christmas, I will say my kids have, beginning in Halloween, going right to Christmas, have made Nightmare Before Christmas a constant in our household, which is a classic also, but wasn't that we really, you know.
Do you like it?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I think it's great, but not at the repetition that I've experienced the past couple of years. But it was cool. I took my kids to see it in the theater a couple of weeks ago, and that was a blast.
But as your kids have gotten older, Ron, do you see them sort of finding favorites that they want to return to, or is it just like
not yet? They're getting there. We finally for the first year ever, we got them to sit down and watch all of It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, without with being able to stay dialed into it the whole time. So that I think as they get older, they're going to turn 5 in December, so they're finally getting into the mindset of being able to sit and focus on something.
How do they feel about Scrooged?
Unknown.
Okay. No. Josh, anything? Any new holiday media traditions in your house?
Dave C. has put in more thought to these questions than I have on pretty much any holiday ever. I don't know. Lindsay and I tend to watch Goodfellas Christmas Eve or day. And we usually all, no, nothing new though. Like we'll watch Vacation, Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
I have my set films. I have my stack of Blu-rays that I watch every year.
Connor's got no room to put new things in. He's got a 2-week system.
We've talked about this before in previous shows, in previous years. They don't make those movies anymore. They all do Hallmark style films. There's no like big budget, big star Christmas movies anymore. The last one was the last Christmas movie that was not very good. So there isn't really one to add to the rotation. What I do try to do every year is buy a new album. I try to find a new Christmas album to buy every year. So that's the only thing I try to add to the rotation. Right. I've got a box of Christmas albums that come out after Thanksgiving that I play until New Year's. Finally, what is the best, most formative or favorite experience you've had with a holiday tradition or piece of media celebrating a holiday tradition or set in a tradition outside of your own? There's a lot there. The best, most formative or favorite experience you've had with a holiday tradition?
The earliest one was that Christmas Eve on Sesame Street was every Christmas Eve. Me and my sister would watch that. Tapping a little bit into Muppets, but more into Sesame Street and the nostalgia and that sort of thing. And then I've talked about it on the show before in years or whatever, but it's the emergence and adoption of It's a Wonderful Life. Mm. You know, and you know, at least for me, what it was I, you know, at the point when I discovered it in the mid 90s, it was in the public domain rotation. You know, it was on any channel at any given time throughout the holiday season because it was free, right? So local TV ran it, PBS ran it, all that, you know, NBC would colorize it and run it and like that sort of thing. And it was kind of, you know, it was a punchline and not really knowing exactly what it was or any plot details or anything, just being a snot-nosed teenager in December one night, I was going out and I was, you know, going to walk out of the house and my dad's in the living room goes, "Hey, what are you doing?" I'm like, I'm about to go out. He's like, "No, you're not." And I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Come in here." And I was like, "What?" He's like, "Oh," he's like, "the local PBS station is playing it uninterrupted in black and white, original version. It's Wonderful Life. Sit down. You're going to watch it." And I was like, "All right, I guess I'm not going out." So I just sat down on the couch and watched it and was just enthralled and engrossed and crying by the end of it. And thus began a holiday tradition of every year, Christmas Eve, watching It's Wonderful Life.
I'm trying to think. I can't think of like a formative media related holiday tradition that I can't think of one, not like what Raj just said. And I imagine Josh doesn't have any.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for this. I'm sorry.
I mean, it's funny because it's like a lot of these questions are dwelling in the cross section of holidays and tradition with media, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're not a big holidays person, which Josh, you're not a big holidays person. You never have.
No,
been, really.
I am. I really love the day and the thing, but I don't associate a lot of
the season.
No, not really.
You don't celebrate the season.
No.
Whereas like personally for me, like, and we haven't touched upon music and all this stuff, but like, you know, the Phil Spector record or the Frank Sinatra record or like all these like holiday, you know, what's the term they use for classics? What the not staples, but the, there's a term in music that I forget what it is, but anyway, but the
standards,
right? And like for me, you know, like again, going back to high school, same time when I saw It's a Wonderful Life, was working in a CD store. And the day after Thanksgiving, the Christmas music started and went until Christmas Eve. And so like 3 days a week, I was immersed in Christmas music nonstop. And then you get into, by the nature of working in a music store and the high fidelity of all, you start comparing and contrasting and all that sort of stuff. So now like holiday music is a big thing for me. And it's because of those memories and because of that, you know, kind of laying the groundwork for it, right?
I mean, I'm the same way. Once Thanksgiving hits, I'm in the best mood of the year until New Year's Eve. Like, it's my happiest time. It was the best time to live in New York.
Yep.
The best memories I have of childhood and all that stuff is that time period.
Yep.
And I think for me, it's not even one thing. It's those things. And the reason why I still hold on to them is because it's the memories that they've generated, even little ones, not necessarily formative ones, but I hear a song and I remember, you know, something about that when I heard that song or some memory it calls up or a movie or watching A Christmas Story with my mom who really loved that movie.
Right.
You know, all those things sort of just pile up and make it, it's the happiest I am. This is the best time of the year.
Yeah. And it's that feeling of the season. And I will say, I'll go back to his other question, which is, are there any new traditions? I totally forgot. And this is reminding me, and it's one of my tradition, but my brother-in-law brought it to our family, which is where, you know, a couple of weeks before Christmas, everybody has to text him two song picks. And one is like a favorite and one is like a deep cut. And then at Christmas, he plays them and then the whole family guesses who picked the song. That's and all fun. That sort of stuff. Yeah. And it's a nice kind of like, and it's cross, you know, it's using music, but also using the season and all that sort of stuff. And it's a fun little thing to do. But, you know, but part of it is that those, you know, those 3 to 4 weeks of the holidays where like Connor, like you're the type who wears a Santa hat for those 3 weeks, yeah. Right? Like, you know, my wife's uncle who is close to our family is the same kind of guy. I see him getting his truck and he's got a Santa hat on, you know, all that stuff. It brings a smile to your face.
It's harder here. I get real sweaty here, but.
So do you hate me?
No. No. You are who you are. You're allowed to be. You're allowed to not like things.
Yeah. No, it's not even that. I just don't think that I base my joy on the calendar.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
Everybody's got a different sort of thing. And like, I like it. I'm fine with it. But, you know, I can have amazing days and times sort of anytime. And I have, there's a little part of me that's like, well, I don't know why I have to be happy right now just because it's this day, which I've always been like, which is horrible. But my kids are like it too. So who gives a shit?
So there you go. Thanks for the emails, everyone. Thanks for the holiday emails. Thanks for the non-holiday emails. It was fun. I enjoyed that cross-section of topics there. That was cool.
Topics.
You emailed in contact@ifanboy.com. Thank you very much. If you want to do that for future shows, you can always just put Media Splode in the subject line and we will use them as we need them. We appreciate it. Let's get out of here before plug some shows. So like I said, this is the final Media Splode of the year. We'll have our all media year and roundup next month to wrap up the year taking place of this show. But also we have our pick of the week show where Josh and I talk about the week's comics every week. We have our monthly Talksplode / Booksplode pairing. 1 month it's Talksplode, the next month it's Booksplode. We'll be talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, books 1 through 4 this month. And then Josh will end the year with a Talksplode interview. He just interviewed Jason Aaron for his last Talksplode, so you can check those out. Those shows and this show are all unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. And of course, you can follow all the action at iFanboy Comics on Instagram.
Head over to AndroidFaithful.com where you check my other podcast where myself and my friends Quinton Dow and Michelle Roman are all talking about Android phones and Android software and apps and hardware and all that fun time. So it's at AndroidFaithful.com. Give us a listen. We'd appreciate it.
All right. And so that's this month's show. This year of Media Splode is over. Thank you very much for listening. Again, next month will be the All Media Year in Roundup. We'll be back in January with another Media Splode. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
Josh S. Claus Esquire.
It would have been better if you just said humbug.
Nah. I don't really believe that. Find it,
the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and